This is Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 10th of February 2012. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle, dated the 9th of February 2012, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Your readers today are Michael Wyard.
Hello.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And Bobby Sanderson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. There are no special announcements this week, but a few items of what's on. The Encore Youth Theatre in Winchester will be presenting its latest show, Summer Holiday, at the Theatre Royal. The musical features a host of classic songs, including the title track and Living Doll, The Young Ones, Bachelor Boy and Do You Wanna Dance. Aiming to retain all the magic of the original 1960s film starring Cliff Richard, the production features a host of talented young performers, including students from Peter Simmons, along with King's, Westgate, Henry Beaufort, Wyvern, St Swithin, Hampshire Collegiate and Toynbee Schools. The shows take place at 7:30pm from Wednesday the 15th of February to Saturday the 18th of February, with a 2:30 matinee on the final day, that's the Saturday the 18th. Tickets cost £13.50 with concessions available and a two-for-one deal for the opening evening. So if you're interested to go to Summer Holiday at the Theatre Royal sometime between Wednesday and Saturday of this coming week, you can book by phoning the box office at the Theatre Royal on 01962 840 440. I repeat, 01962 840 440. The Winchester Discovery Centre is hosting an art exhibition which will be of particular interest to visually impaired people during February and March. It starts on the 14th of March and goes through till the 14th of February and goes through till the 18th of March. The exhibition features later works by Henri Matisse, and there will be a guided audio tours of the Matisse exhibition led by Joe Breslov, available for visually impaired people on two dates. And the two dates are Tuesday the 21st of February at 2pm and Wednesday the 22nd of February at 10:30am. During these visits, there will also be the opportunity to explore Matisse's work through tactile versions of pictures supplied by the Living Paintings Trusts. And you're warmly invited to join one of these visits, which will last about an hour and a half. For these visits, there is no need to book. Please come to the area near the lift on the ground floor of the Discovery Centre and someone will be there to meet you. The exhibition is especially interesting because during the later years of his life, Henri Matisse suffered from sight loss and the style of his work changed dramatically. He adjusted to his sight loss by working with huge sheets of paper he could still see and large blocks of painted paper in vibrant colours which he cut out. The exhibition features 35 lithographic prints of the famous cutouts produced in the last 4 years of his life and includes many of his iconic images such as the snail and the blue nudes. As well as the two tours, there will also be a workshop in the learning spaces at the Discovery Centre led by Keith Hatter. Here you can learn more about how Matisse created his cutout pictures and create one of your own using the same method. The workshop will be on Wednesday the 29th of February starting at 10am and lasting about an hour. And if you'd like to come to that workshop, please phone 01962 873 603 to book a free place because they need to know how many people are coming. So that's the Discovery Centre, telephone number 01962 873 603. So if you're in, want any more information about this Matisse Drawing with Scissors exhibition, please contact that number. So the dates to remember are the two tours on the 21st of February and the 22nd of February, and the workshop on the 29th of February. The Winchester City Residents Association AGM will be held on Monday the 27th of February at 7:30 p.m. in Milner Hall, St Peter Street, Winchester, and the speaker will be Mary Edwards, Chief Executive of the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Trust, and she'll be talking about the merger of Winchester and Basingstoke Trusts. There's no admission charge and all are welcome. And then just finally, a couple of reminders. The Winchester Farmers Market takes place on the second and the final Sunday of each month, and it's officially the largest farmers market in the UK with 95 stalls, and was voted best in the country by the Guardian Food magazine. So that's the second and final Sundays of each month. And a further reminder about an exhibition at INTEC, that's the Science Centre and Planetarium up Maughan Hill. They have, I remember reading information about this on an earlier broadcast. They have an interactive exhibition about health, identity and ancestry. And you can find out how genetics can be used to understand or help medical conditions, solve a crime, or see how unusual you are through a series of hands-on activities. So this exhibition continues until the 27th of March, and that's at the INTEC Science Centre and Planetarium at Maughan Hill. If you need more information, the telephone number there is 01962 863 791. I repeat, 01962 863 791. So, quite a lot of things on in Winchester at the moment. Lighting up times, or sunrise and sunset. Today, Friday the 10th of March, the sun rose at 07:29 and will set at 17:12. So the sun came up about 7:30 this morning and will set just after 5:10 in the afternoon. Wednesday of next week, the 15th, sun will rise at 07:20 and set at 17:21. So sunrise at 7:20 in the morning and sunset at 5:20 in the afternoon. Right, sorry, a lot of announcements this week, but we'll now get on to the meat of the memory stick, which are the headline stories from the Hampshire Chronicle. And this week, the headlines are: housing waiting list up by 70%, Southern Electric in the dock over latest power cuts, and betrayed over injury discharge. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Housing waiting list up by 70%. 4,400 people waiting for a home, says the headline, and more families placed in bed and breakfast. More than 4,400 people are on the City Council's waiting list to get a roof over their heads, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. The waiting list has soared by 70% over the past 2 years, as the number of affordable homes built has fallen by two-thirds. Coupled with rising private sector rents, council bosses are under increasing pressure to find suitable accommodation. Now, for the first time since 2002, Winchester City Council is having to place homeless families in bed and breakfast. Last month, that's January, it was 5 families, which has since grown to 9. It is partly because private sector rents in Winchester are rising by up to 8% per year. A 2-bedroom flat now costs around £900 per month. A meeting on homelessness heard this news. Yet demand still outstrips supply, with some estate agents operating a waiting list for those seeking somewhere to rent. The details emerged at a meeting held by the Winchester Church's night shelter. Almost 100 people attended, and the event at Winchester Discovery Centre had guest speakers, including Andrew Palmer, City Council Head of Strategic Housing. Mr. Palmer said, "It was becoming harder to find homes for families in need. The recession came in 2008, but the consequences of the recession are just catching up with us now. One effect is that fewer houses, including affordable ones, are being built. This year, around 50 affordable homes will be completed, when the usual figure is around 150, Mr. Palmer said. He added that since September, the council had spent £20,000 placing families in bed and breakfast. Michelle Price, who runs the night shelter in Jury Street, said demand for its 17 places was also high. While it provided shelter to around 140 needy people last year, a further 400 were turned away. She added that during the current cold snap, it had increased capacity from 17 to 21 beds. She said, "We are seeing more and more people becoming homeless after losing their jobs and being unable to pay their mortgage or rent." Steve Cavalier, who offers counselling at the night shelter, said, "People don't come here, they end up here. Any of us could be in a position where we end up here, not through choice, but through circumstance." Along with 17 beds, the night shelter runs a breakfast club and offers advice on claiming benefits. It also helps guests to find a permanent home, and does so in 72% of cases. But there were some better news for those in need when it was revealed that the first new council houses in Winchester for a generation could be ready within 2 years. The City Council is forming a new team of experts to bring the plans forward as soon as possible. Details emerged at a meeting of the Cabinet Housing Committee last week. Members heard that the council had been unable to build before because of the old national rent system, which saw around a third of rent paid by Winchester Council tenants, about £9 million a year, being kept by Westminster. Government reforms, which come into force in April, will now allow the district to keep that money in exchange for a one-off payment of £157 million. Winchester can buy itself out of the national scheme. Repaid as a 30-year loan, the deal could save Winchester more than £100 million over the next three decades, and council chiefs hope to use the extra cash to fund repairs and also to build some new homes. The council will need to identify suitable sites, draw up blueprints, and secure planning permission, the meeting heard. Judith Steventon Baker, Vice Chair of Winchester Tenants Group TACT, said, "It's a dream for us. If any of it comes off, it will improve things immediately."
Southern Electric in the dock over latest power cuts. Kingsworthy firms may seek compensation. Fed-up businesses and residents have slammed Southern Electric for the latest in a series of power cuts to hit Kingsworthy. Around 1,300 homes were without power during three separate blackouts spread across Saturday and Sunday. Excuse me. Just a fortnight after a similar number were affected. Although most homes had power restored within a few hours on Saturday evening, 200 remained without power until 1 p.m. on Sunday. But there was another power cut between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. on Sunday, affecting 2,000 homes, and yet another for about an hour from around 4 p.m. Southern Electric, SSE, said the problem was caused by snowy weather bringing down a high-voltage power line. Alison Geary, manager of the Cart and Horses pub in London Road, said it lost around £3,000 when it had to close over Sunday lunchtime and in the evening. She said, "We lost power between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. and had to close because we could not use any of the equipment we have. We were pretty fully booked and had birthday parties, so it was a big loss. We phoned Southern Electric and kept phoning them to get updates, but their communications have been horrendous." She added, "I have never lived anywhere where there have been so many power cuts. There must be a better way of satisfying customers. Anna Howells, tenant at the King Charles pub in Loveden Lane, said the business lost out on £2,500 worth of takings when it lost power during two peak service times. She said it went off first on Saturday evening, and we were very busy, and then it went again at 9:30 a.m. on Sunday until 2:30 p.m, right across lunchtime, which is where we make our money. Luckily, we have gas ovens, so we could still cook roast dinners. We had to put a sign out saying we were still open because we could not call anyone to say we were serving. It was a huge hit to our business. She added the pub would be looking for compensation from SSE for the loss in trade. It follows a power cut on January the 24th that blacked out 1,500 houses in the same area after a substation in Willis Way failed. Councillor Jane Rutter, who represents Kingsworthy on the City Council, said the area's infrastructure was not good enough. She said, in the last 3 or 4 months, we have had a spate of power cuts, but Kingsworthy has always been notorious for power failures. I think this is down to the infrastructure, and SSE needs to make sure that its infrastructure is up to the job. It's not putting enough resources into it at the moment. All we can do is to keep pointing out that it's not a good enough service, and we deserve a better one. A Kingsworthy resident, who asked not to be named, said, we keep candles and torches around the house because you never know when the power is going off next. We had relations staying over the weekend who live in Cumbria, and they couldn't believe it. They said they couldn't remember the last power cut they had up there. Anne Jones of Felmer Drive, Kingsworthy, said, besides solving the power failures, we must as a community look to our neighbours and be sure that anyone at risk is supported during these times. Winchester MP Steve Brine, who has taken up the matter of power cuts in the area in the past, said he will be meeting with SSE managers today, Thursday, to address the problems. Mr. Brine said, I'm meeting with SSE on my demand so they can explain themselves. They say they have a plan to invest heavily in the supply for Kingsworthy and other parts of Winchester, but their supply of information was appalling, and customers got more information from me than they did from SSE. Mr. Brine said he would raise the issue of compensation for residents and businesses at the meeting. He added, SSE were lucky there was not as much snow in Kingsworthy last weekend as there was in other parts of the country. Hannah Gleave, a spokesman for SSE, said, we would like to apologise to customers affected by the power cut in Kingsworthy. Our engineers identified a secondary fault on the network while carrying out repairs to a separate fault in Kingsworthy the previous night. This was due to adverse weather conditions which damaged our high voltage network. Another power cut hit Twyford on Monday morning after an MG car collided with a telegraph pole on a service road off Hazley Road. Power was restored to about 400 properties by 9 p.m. after they were delayed, waiting for the police to finish at the scene. The driver of the vehicle was shaken but unharmed. Power was also offline on Sunday afternoon in Hairstock after a problem with a substation in Elling Close, affecting around 200 homes.
Betrayed over injury discharge. A soldier not hurt enough for compensation. He was too badly injured to stay in the army, but not injured enough to qualify for compensation. Soldier Jamie Geary claims he was thrown out of the military after suffering hearing loss of up to 14%, only to be refused a payout because his handicap was not sufficiently serious. Mr. Geary of Kingsworthy says he feels betrayed by the Ministry of Defence, who are currently faced with cutting 7,000 army personnel by 2015 under the Defence Review. On the one hand, he says, the army says I am not well enough to work, and yet on the other, they're saying I'm not unwell enough to get compensation. The army is reshaping, trying to save money, so people with injuries are simply being discharged. A former drummer and machine gunner in the Coldstream Guards, the 27-year-old Iraq and Northern Ireland veteran, has been unemployed for 3 months. He has gone from earning £1,300 a month to getting just £31 a week job seeker's allowance, plus a monthly army pension of £374. Mr. Geary and his wife Karina, aged 23, and their two children, aged 4 and 14 months, are scraping by in a two-bedroom council flat. In 2005, routine tests showed that the soldiers' hearing had been affected by exposure to noise from training ground explosions and his drumming. He was still cleared to go on a 7-month tour in Basra, Iraq, where his base was subjected to several mortar attacks. In 2007, another test confirmed that his hearing had deteriorated as a result of the blasts. 2 years later, he was preparing for frontline duty in Afghanistan when he was told to take a desk job instead. And last year, he was medically discharged because new tests showed his hearing loss was between 6 and 14%. But Mr. Geary discovered that compensation was awarded only to servicemen whose loss of hearing is 20% or more. He was handed a £13,000 resettlement grant, but says he spent a large amount of the money making himself debt-free in a bid to overcome the challenges that lay ahead. "I've been unemployed since I left the army last November," he said. "I have appealed against the decision not to award me compensation and will keep on appealing until I get some kind of help. I gave my life to the army, but when I needed them, they weren't there for me. I feel betrayed." A Ministry of Defence spokesman said it paid compensation whenever it had a legal liability to do so, but was unable to comment further at the time that the Chronicle went to press.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Burrows. Hazel Winifred Burrows, in hospital on the 3rd of February, aged 81. Clark. Alexander Clark, at Challoner House on the 30th of January. Clinch. Elsie, known as Frizzy Clinch, on the 3rd of February. Cox, Nigel Cox, in hospital on the 5th of February, aged 33. Cox, Peter Elliot Cox, on the 1st of February. Crop, Thomas Henry Crop, on the 4th of February in Ashley Manor Nursing Home, aged 93. Farrell, Anne Farrell, on the 31st of January. Forrester, Eileen Forrester, on the 2nd of February, aged 83. Gore, Julie Alana Margaret Gore, on the 3rd of February. Gunnell, Richard Christopher Gunnell, on the 6th of February, aged 66. Kennedy, Janet Kennedy, née Trevis, on the 31st of January, aged 58. Matthews, Elsie May Matthews, on the 30th of January, aged 93. Medcroft, Avril Medcroft, née Barnes, at Northlands House, Southampton, on the 31st of January, aged 89. Moxon, Betty Moxon, on the 2nd of February, aged 86. Smith, Dennis Smith, in hospital on the 13th of January, aged 75. Steele, Keith Steele, on the 30th of January. Tapson, Yvonne Mary Tapson, at home on the 2nd of February, aged 83. Thomas, Julia Vera Thomas, née Askin, on the 6th of February, aged 58. And now we have Christian comment.
And this week, Christian comment is offered by Rosemary Baker. She entitles it, The Anatomy of Thin Places. While sorting out books and papers recently, I came across a slim pamphlet bearing the title Thin Places. It was amongst cookery and dieting books, and having just seen a thin Dawn French on breakfast TV, my thoughts immediately turned to images of places where fat people, like me, can't go. The camel going through the eye of the needle phenomenon. So, what are thin places? Since the beginning of recorded history, kings, scholars, peasants, artists, and slaves have been drawn to places where the veil between this world and the other world is thin. Legends have been created and tales passed down that describe adventures and encounters when the two worlds met and time stood still. The Western European landscape is dappled with such places. Some, like Glastonbury, are familiar to most. But hidden in fields and forests, mountain villages and remote islands, are thin places with a more subtle glow, like tiny pearls resting safely in the bosom of their mother country, waiting to be discovered again and again. Tours and holidays visiting special mystical sites and thin places are advertised. And my pamphlet was about one man's particular experiences. His understanding was based on George MacLeod's description of Iona and complements other images such as sacred space and holy ground. Thin places are ports in the storm of life, where the pilgrims can move closer to the God they seek, where one leaves that which is familiar and journeys into the divine presence. They are stopping places where people can pause to wonder about what lies beyond the mundane rituals, grief, trials, and boredom of our day-to-day life. They probe to the core of the human heart and open the pathway that leads to satisfying the familiar hungers and yearnings common to all people on earth. The hunger to be connected, to be a part of some greater, to be loved, to find peace. They sometimes occur in situations or encounters with people or in worship experiences. There is a website advertising an ecumenical newsletter called thin places for those with a particular interest in the contemplative spiritual journey. It is a sharing of opportunities, special services and prayer meetings, where it is hoped the boundary between the sacred and the everyday feels thin and God's presence might be more strongly felt. My own thin places number special places and everyday experiences, such as seeing the snowdrops set against the harsh frozen ground this morning. Then there are special worship experiences. There are also special moments when visiting a dying or a housebound person. This is just to name but some of them.
We now move on to letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. The first four letters are all concerning, in response to a letter that appeared last week about the planning application for Barton Farm. So we'll start off with these first four letters, and then there'll be further letters after that.
This one comes from Brian Porter, who lives in Park Close, Winchester, and it's headed, "Time to Move On." He would say that. Sir, Martin Bell of Compton, reported in the Chronicle of February the 2nd, states it's time to move on as a democratic decision has now been reached on the Barton Farm debate. Of course, he, like Councillor Beckett, would say that, coming from an area that would be unaffected by such development. The debate at the Theatre Royal was supposedly staged to show democracy at work, when, as far as Councillor Beckett was concerned, it was a case of, "Do not confuse me with detailed argument against the development of Barton Farm, as my mind is made up." To ensure he got his way, he undemocratically and without explanation imposed a three-line whip on Conservative councillors to include Barton Farm for future development. Mr. Bell also criticises the Hampshire Chronicle for continuing the debate when, in fact, it is performing a democratic role in allowing dissent for this unpopular decision to develop Barton Farm. He also rants on about a small number of objectors being given more time than they deserve and accuses them of only being interested in preventing development in their backyard. Apart from the rank hypocrisy of such comments, he clearly has not either understood or prefers to brush over all the numerous well-founded arguments against the development of Barton Farm and the problems it will cause. Also, letters to the Hampshire Chronicle against the development and its adverse effect on Winchester come from far and wide, as per that from Mr. Duckworth in Nether Wallop, which was published in the Chronicle on February the 2nd. Democracy is not about one man enforcing a three-line whip to ensure he gets the decision he wants for whatever reasons. It should be about a free vote taken by councillors without self-interest, based on all the facts and their advantages and disadvantages to the future of Winchester. And this did not happen. Brian Porter.
And this is a follow-up from John Duckworth of 5 Bells Lane, Nether Wallop, whom we just referred to. Sir, Martin Bell's lesson on democracy, in letters February the 2nd, would seek to silence any voices raised in either dissent or dissuasion between the making of a controversial decision, not in any manifesto, I believe, by, quotes, "elected representatives," unquote, and its not inevitable implementation. Does that leave any role post-decision for either a parliamentary or any other form of peaceful opposition, even if it is constituted of NIMBYs or an orchestrated group? Personally, I belong to neither, being only concerned to save the Greenbelt Valley north of the Barton Farm wooded ridge. Another feature of a democracy is that it allows peaceful and continuing dissent by a minority. David Hockney has come back from Vic, California, to view the state of his country and to enjoy again its remaining countryside. This he has celebrated in a series of joyous landscapes presently glowing upon the walls of the Royal Academy. In an essay in the current National Trust magazine, he says, "When it comes to things like the threat of development to our landscapes, we should speak out a bit more, stand up more. We're a bit too polite at times. We should shout, hold it." I prefer the advice of Mr. Hockney to that of Mr. Bell. John Duckworth, 5 Bells Lane, Netherwallop.
And a third letter, headed "Nothing Sinister About Caring," from Jeff Bruty. Sir Martin Bell's letter, the Chronicle of February the 2nd, highlights the problem we have in Winchester with regard to democratic representation. He himself is a parish councillor in Compton and presumably voted for Councillor Beckett to represent the interests of himself and others in Compton on the City Council, just as residents of St Bartholomew and St Barnabas wards elected councillors to speak for them. The problem is that representatives of city wards are outnumbered by those from outside the city, such as Compton. Mr Bell attended the debate in the Theatre Royal and concluded that it was dominated by the objectors. I also was there, and on the contrary, my overwhelming impression was that Councillor Beckett controlled the debate, just as he has dominated the council by imposing a three-line whip on members of his party. The objectors are also declared to be a minority, despite the petition that was signed by over 1,300 people in November and was completely ignored by Councillor Beckett. The explanation as to why the planning experts employed by the city to whom Mr. Bell refers have not suggested alternatives to Barton Farm is because it's not in their interests. It is more convenient to have one site with one developer pledged to pay for the infrastructure. Those who oppose this scheme are accused of being NIMBYs. But in the same edition of your newspaper is a letter from a reader in Netherwallop as well as from Hairstock. People feel strongly about the place where they live. There's nothing sinister in a group of local people coming together to protect it, as very often they are more aware of the issues than politicians who don't live in the neighbourhood. I dare to suggest that if a landowner were to sell a large plot of land in Compton to a developer, Mr. Bell might well oppose the building of a new housing estate there. That's from Jeff Bruty, Manningford Close, Winchester.
This next letter, still on the same subject, comes from Roy Faithful, who lives in Minstead Close, Hairstock. "Sir, Martin Bell may want to move on," Chronicle, February the 2nd, "now that the crosshairs are back on Barton Farm and away from Bushfield Camp. Hardly surprising when one considers his locality, Compton. I suppose I'm NIMBYish too, but I resent decisions about Winchester planning being taken after a three-line whip set up by a council leader who, like most of us, most of those voting, is not a resident of the area and who will not have to suffer the problems this unnecessary development will cause. It is also painfully ironic that there are still areas of brownfield vacant. Look at the ground next to Waitrose in Week and the large vacant house and grounds in Park Road," says Roy Faithful.
And there we have it, change of subject for the letters. This one is by Sue Faulkner, who is the chairman or chair of Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club. Sir, I was encouraged to read that Winchester City Council is now considering a new sports and leisure facility as a long-term alternative to the high cost of maintaining River Park Leisure Centre. Councillor Keith Wood is absolutely right to open up this option, as River Park is deficient in so many fundamental ways. Winchester needs the vision to provide a place to play and compete and inspire the community. It has excellent sports clubs and impressive participation statistics. Let clubs, council and local partners build a facility which reflects the passion for sport and healthy lifestyles and nurtures talent across the district. Modern technologies can improve energy efficiency, reduce emissions and minimise running costs. A more accessible location with improved parking, served by buses and cycle paths, would reduce traffic in the city centre. An attractive centre would increase participation and improve health and well-being. Winchester must build a centre to meet the needs of an expanding population and offer our talented sportsmen and women training facilities to allow them to excel. This is the year to plan for a centre to be proud of. Sue Faulkner, Chair of the Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club.
And this next letter from L. Sheldon, who says, disappointed and rather in the dark. As a 30-plus years resident of Badger Farm and a city centre business owner, I feel the right to comment on my local environment has been time-served. I'm not usually an hysterical Middle Englander who reacts negatively to council initiatives, but some comment is warranted on the replacement of the street lighting. I've sometimes grudgingly accepted and suffered the council's decision to deploy contractors to my little close in the name of improvements, the recent addition of tar and too much gravel to our pavements, for example. This seemingly erroneous addition to perfectly serviceable paths rendered services akin to crunchy gravel walkways, a good proportion of which ended up on my lawns, my driveway, my garage, and on occasions into my property itself. But the recent improvements, so-called, to street lighting, of which I only learned by way of a leaflet scrunched through my door a week beforehand, appears to be a retro step that renders my surroundings to the dark ages. It would have been nice to have had a local referendum on such a wide-reaching effect upon the community, but I suppose that's asking too much in these days of selective democracy. The new lamps are not fit for purpose. They are so dim that my property is now in almost complete darkness. A security issue just waiting for the local burglars to exploit, surely. I now fear for our unblemished safety record of zero personal attacks and break-ins around my once safe haven. The light is horrible, cold, whiteness, making my once inviting and familiar locality feel like a soulless industrial area. If we were to suffer this change without consultation, surely it would not be beyond the capability of technology to have utilised a much warmer shade of white. I'm confused, disappointed, and very much in the dark. But at least I can look forward to the council passing on the saving in electricity to a smaller council tax bill next year. Right? And that's from L. Sheldon, St. Anne's Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
This letter comes from Paul Lewis, and he lives in Bath Place in Winchester, and the letter is headed Christmas boom down to market forces? Sir, all hail Kevin Warren, saviour of Winchester. Mr. Warren, the council's head of estates, is responsible for the controversial introduction of a market in the High Street. Last week, in February the 2nd's Chronicle, he silenced his critics by revealing that the presence of his street market and the impressive increase in Christmas visitors is more than just coincidence. Some might have claimed the city's success was almost entirely due to factors like the cathedral's expanded Christmas market, to Winchester Bid's massive advertising campaign, and the work done by other council departments such as economic development and tourism. What a blatant misuse of statistics that would have been. It now seems so obvious. The increase in footfall Winchester has seen over many Christmases would have ground to a halt last year, but for Mr. Warren's selfless scheme to fill the lower High Street with market traders. Paul Lewis, Bath Place.
Carbuncles invade our countryside, says Vincent Chambers in a letter from Whitehill, Upham. Sir, recently the countryside hereabouts has been witness to an outbreak of blue carbuncles, also known as grit bins. These have no practical use for all those days of the year when there is no snow, and a vanishingly small potential for practical use when there is snow. Who nowadays drives with a shovel in the boot? And if they did, what are the chances that they might A, get stuck in snow, and B, be close to a grit bin? However, these monstrosities have an unintended symbolic value as a reminder of the folly of mankind in general, and of politicians in particular, in that, as at parish council level, there can be laudable enthusiasm which can result in excessive me-tooism without thinking through the consequences. They remind us that at county and national level, it's easier to be seen to be doing something, no matter how counterproductive or costly, even in times of austerity, than to argue the sometimes difficult case for doing nothing, the cure being worse than the disease. In recent years, our lanes have been disfigured by rashes of unnecessary road signs, yellow marker posts, and now grit bins. There may have been a gain in safety, but there certainly has been a loss of amenity, which is sad. Vincent Chambers, Whitehill, Upham.
Primary places is just the beginning, writes Claudia Goss. In response to your article regarding the spiralling demand for primary school places in the region, can I state the obvious, that these children will need secondary school places, then further and higher education places, then houses, cars, etc. All of these will impact on an environment already under stress. See your other front page article on unachievable carbon emission targets. This is not just a local issue, but a national one. When are all those responsible for planning going to acknowledge the elephant in the room, namely unsustainable population growth? Claudia Goss, Hatherley Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
This letter is headed Charity in Call for Expert Assistance, and it comes from Ron Owen, who lives in Sheridan Road. Sir, there must be among your readers many who have just retired or approaching retirement and are looking for some active role to fill the void left by all the things we gain from the world of work. I'm talking of worthwhile objectives, the feeling of making a difference and being part of a team, an outlet for energy and skills and feedback. The feedback that we do is appreciated. Crewes, South Hampshire, is in need of people with skills in fundraising, marketing, sales, who can give some time and energy to generate income to keep our branch alive and well. We have 60 plus volunteers who are there for people in grief, who support their clients on the grieving journey and help them rebuild their lives and recapture belief in a future. Recent clients include families of members of the armed forces who have lost their lives in Iraq and Afghanistan. While we are always interested in recruiting for frontline counselling work, our most urgent need is for people who can help us survive financially. We make no charge for our services. If any of your readers are interested, our local chairman, Terry Garvey, would be delighted to hear from you on, and here is a telephone number, 01489 78615. I'll do the number again, 01489 784 615, and that appeal comes from Ron Owen of Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
That concludes the letters to the editor, and next we have two items of historical interest, one from 100 years ago and the other from 25 years ago.
This is the one from 1912. As early as Tuesday in last week, skaters were trying the ice on Fisher's Pond. The slight thaw on the Wednesday was disappointing to many who visited. At the weekend, there were increased numbers present, especially on Sunday, when all day there was a good company. On Monday, Captain and Mrs. Standish entertained a private party on the pond. Doubtless the companies would have been much larger, but for the extensive ice at Winnall, the Winchester visitors being few.
And now from 1987. This is familiar. There is a mounting speculation that yet another inquiry will be held into the final section of the M3 motorway between Bar End and Bassett. It would be the fourth in 15 years. Meanwhile, one of those leading the campaign for a reopened inquiry has called on the Department of Transport to start work as soon as possible on the southern section of the M3 between Compton and Bassett. City Councillor Mrs. Barbara Bryant wishes the inquiry to re-examine the 1 mile long stretch between Bar End and Hockley.
Next, we have the Chronicle comment, the editorial of the Hampshire Chronicle, which will then be followed by first person and then letter from Westminster.
Editorial comment is headed, "Service not up to standard." It seems unbelievable that in this day and age, thousands of households in a major suburb of Winchester can't rely on a constant supply of electricity. But that's the reality for people living in and around Kingsworthy, who suffered no less than 3 separate power failures over last weekend. If it had been an isolated one-off incident, or in this case a 3-off incident, then perhaps it could be put down to just one of those things. But only last month, more than 1,500 homes suffered the same fate, and that was the latest in a string of similar power failures in the area. Now disgruntled businesses in Kingsworthy are considering claiming compensation for lost revenue caused by the cuts. 2 affected pubs lost a combined £500,000 in taking during the busy Sunday lunchtime period. We asked Southern Electricity, that's SSE, to tell us how many cuts there'd been over the past year. But surprisingly, they were unwilling or unable or unwilling to tell us. The latest failure was put down to the snowy conditions. But it was hardly Siberia. Just an inch or so fell, not even enough to bring Heathrow to a grinding halt. Let's hope MP Steve Bryan can get some sense out of Southern Electric when he meets them today. It's clear that its customers in Kingsworthy are not getting an acceptable level of service. It would appear that proper investment in infrastructure is needed and urgently.
First person this week is written by Ron Allison, who gives our thanks for 60 years. Welcome to the Octo Club, said one of my older friends last week. You'll like most of the members, I'm sure, but don't expect all of them to be around forever. Well, no, I won't, but I'm sure I'll get on with them while they remain fully paid up members. I did when we were all septos, if that's the right collective noun for that group of youngsters, and I see no reason for any changes now. Some things have altered, of course, none more so than the way we keep in touch. While some 80-year-olds resolutely reject any kind of new technology, many impress me with their ability to use just about every gadget and gizmo available and reasonably priced. Some are as adept as their grandchildren and get just as mortified if there is a glitch or problem with the newest bit of kit. Others of us can just about get by as long as there is a young family techie on hand, or at least in touch, by mobile. Of course, it would be ridiculous to write of octogenarians this week in particular and to fail to recognise the one who stands out amongst us all. I refer, of course, to Her Majesty the Queen, who acceded to the throne 60 years ago last Monday. She was in Kenya at the time. Her father, King George VI, had died overnight at Sandringham. And the young Princess Elizabeth had, in fact, become queen some hours before she herself was told what had happened by Prince Philip. The Queen and her husband flew back to London, where, while dealing with her own grief and that of her family, she immediately began a reign which has been to the immeasurable benefit of us in the United Kingdom and to millions of others around the world. I was on national service in the army in Germany when we heard of the death of the king, and I can remember a group of green soldiers wondering how our new monarch would manage. Would she cope? We needn't have worried. Cope? She did so in 1952 and has done so ever since. Though merely coping was only the starting point. As the world, the old empire and Britain changed and developed in almost every respect, Queen Elizabeth has ensured that the monarchy too has moved with the times, perhaps never ahead of them, maybe only just alongside them, but never too far behind to become irrelevant. Her reign, second longest in our history, has not yet run its course. Apart from anything else, there is a diamond jubilee. That will involve millions of us. But as ever, immediately supporting the Queen will be Prince Philip and their family. They, with her faith, are the foundations on which she has built her life and reign. Thank you, ma'am.
And Westminster Diary is by George Hollingbury, the MP for the Mian Valley. Captain Settino, formerly of the Costa Concordia, is likely to go down in history as something of a villain. The man whose motto seems to have been "Captain and crew first," as his ship sank beneath his feet and lives were needlessly lost. I somehow doubt that investigators will find a soggy copy of Rudyard Kipling's If in his cabin, if they ever raise the wreck. But as I read the articles castigating him for his failures, It does make me think a little. Always accepting that Schettino himself let himself and his passengers down badly when they looked to him for leadership, can we all look ourselves in the mirror and be sure how we would behave when terrible things happen? Can you really know how you would react if you stumbled across a street robbery in progress? What if it were you that saw a man with a smoking rucksack on the tube train? Which way would you run? Of course, with many of the Chronicle's readership having a military background, there might well be rather more going forward than rather back in this neck of the woods. But the rest of us? Well, I can only say that I think most would only ever know if confronted with the choice. For the vast majority, I'm glad to say that those nightmare scenarios are very unlikely to happen. But collectively, I do wonder if we don't all fall down occasionally in much smaller ways. Many of us recognise the failure to confront duty in ourselves. After all, it's only human. How often have you walked by that piece of discarded litter that you could have picked up? What about that 30 mile an hour limit? When did you pop in to talk to your elderly neighbour who you know could do with some company? Now, these are hardly transgressions in the magnitude of the Concordia disaster, but in total, I believe they are surely of some importance. Thankfully, they also happen more often and are easier to tackle. So it's easy to focus on huge failures like the captain of the Concordia. They make good copy for newspapers and light up a sense of moral indignation in all of us. But for the rest of us, it's day-to-day decisions that we're confronted with. Who knows how much it could all add up to if we took a little time to do a few extra things the right way.
We now move on to items of general news interest.
Hospital award schemes extended. Award schemes for exceptional staff at Basingstoke Hospital have now been expanded to include the ones in Winchester and Andover. The move is a result of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and Andover War Memorial Hospital coming under the management of Basingstoke to form the new Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust. It means staff at Winchester and Andover are now in line for the WOW Awards and the Director of Nursing Awards. Members of the public and colleagues can nominate any member of hospital staff for the awards, which have various categories and are celebrated four times a year at a lunch. The annual Director of Nursing Awards recognise individuals and teams of nurses and midwives, and the ceremony this year is to be held in Basingstoke on July the 6th. Sorry, it's a 5, not a 6. July the 5th. The Foundation Trust's chief nurse, Donna Green, said that she hoped the nominations would increase now the awards will be across three hospitals. She said, "We want staff from all three hospitals to be recognised." Although nurses and midwives who are nominated often say they were only doing their jobs, it is the little things which make a huge difference to patients and their families. Nominations for the Director of Nursing Awards are welcome from patients, carers and the public until the end of May this year. And they can be made by contacting Karen O'Hanlon on telephone number again 01256 313 435. That's Karen O'Hanlon on 01256 313 435. 3435.
This is a scam warning. Hampshire Trading Standards officers are warning about a new cash voucher scam targeting elderly residents. Fraudsters are making unsolicited phone calls to people promising them cash in a lottery or sweepstake win or benefit refund. 17 incidents have been reported in the last 4 months from across Hampshire, with 6 in the Winchester Eastleigh area, 2 in the New Forest, and others in Upham, Alton and Denmead. The fraudsters often pretend to be bank officials working for a government body or lottery representatives and try to convince consumers that their prize is genuine. They phone victims, persuade them to buy a cash voucher, and then in a later call get them to pass over the voucher's serial number. The victims are promised personal delivery of a cheque, but once the scammer has the voucher number, they're never heard from again. This warning follows an incident in New Milton, in which an elderly lady was swindled out of money after receiving a call from someone claiming to be from the Ministry of Justice. She was told that if she bought a UCash voucher for £150, a representative would come to exchange the voucher for her insurance refund. The caller phoned back and she innocently provided the serial number of the voucher. But he did not come to the house with a refund and she did not hear from him again. A 68-year-old retired chartered accountant from Chandler's Ford, who asked not to be named, was targeted but quickly smelled a rat. They were quite plausible at first and quite persistent. They said I was eligible for a benefit refund and quoted reference numbers and promised £3,750, but said I had to pay £120 for this voucher as tax. The caller had an English name, Alex Matthew, but spoke with an Indian accent. The second flag was that he said he would round the figure down from £124 to £120, and the Inland Revenue would never round it down. And who pays tax on benefits? They also said their cheque would clear in the bank in an hour, usually 3 days. The warning bell started to ring and I realised it was a scam. But people have got to be alert, as they are plausible. County Council leader Ken Thornber said, "This is a new scam, which often targets vulnerable residents. In some cases, elderly victims have been cheated out of hundreds of pounds, as these cold callers can be so convincing with their stories. It is important that everyone is sceptical about any unsolicited offers, refunds or prizes. If it seems too good to be true, then it probably is. A genuine government body or lottery operator would never ask someone to pay taxes, insurance or any other fee before receiving their winnings. And the advice is never to send voucher codes to anyone asking for an upfront fee. If you do receive a telephone call about an offer that sounds too good to be true, contact Trading Standards via Consumer Direct on 08454 040506. That's 08454 040506.
A row brewing over plans for a town coffee shop. People in Bishop's Waltham are preparing to fight new plans they fear could put independent shops out of business. The battle comes just months after Sainsbury's were given permission to build a new superstore on the edge of the market town. And now, residents and business owners are worried about the former ladies' clothing shop, Annabelle's, being taken over by a national coffee chain thought to be Costa Coffee. A planning application for the change of use from retail to mixed has been submitted to the City Council, which shows the change of use as a coffee shop. Agent Savills, based in Cardiff, has put in the planning application for applicant Realis Estates Limited in Birmingham. Documents show that the shop would employ 8 full-time and 8 part-time staff, serving hot and cold drinks and cold food. Proposed hours are from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Resident Colin Latouf, whose wife runs a coffee shop on the High Street, said there are already 5 on the High Street and 8 restaurants. We don't need Costa Coffee in Bishop's Waltham. We don't need any corporate brand in Bishop's Waltham, said Mr. Latouf of Rareridge Lane, who added that other than the Co-op, there were no brand names on the road. It's a medieval village. It's got huge history. If you have one brand, the others will follow. What we're concerned about is keeping Bishop's Waltham independent. And the Hampshire Chronicle understands that Bishop's Waltham Parish Council's planning committee objected to the application on the grounds of having too many coffee shops. But that decision was overruled by full council giving a no comment response because it didn't want a shop unoccupied. Ex-councillor Dorothy Quiney, who resigned at the same meeting over an unrelated issue, said, "It's overload. If we had another coffee house, they would probably find it to be to the detriment of others." She said the change of use could open the site to a number of possible uses. Neither Whitbread, which owns Costa Coffee, nor the application agent would respond when approached by the Chronicle.
On the march for Macmillan. A pair of Winchester businessmen are walking 100 kilometres non-stop to raise money for charity. Philip Plambeck of estate agent Smith's Gore and David Myers of Adam Architects have signed up for the London to Brighton Challenge in May, where they must complete the route in 24 hours. They are joined by fellow Hampshire businessman Mark Pelly, a partner at Henry Adams Estate Agents in Petersfield, and Lee Hurst of Andover, who works for Vodafone. The team aims to raise £2,500 for Macmillan Cancer Support, and the challenge takes place on May the 12th.
The case of the repaired swan. That's a literary allusion which will become clear as we go on. It has been a long-running saga, the mystery of the headless swan. When will it be repaired, was the elementary question, asked by civic campaigners in Winchester. Now the broken statue, immortalised in a Sherlock Holmes short story, is about to be restored. The bird had graced the wall of a Winchester building for decades, until it was damaged around 10 years ago. Campaigners have since battled to have it fixed, but the issue became entangled in bureaucratic quilling. On Wednesday, the swan was due to be removed and taken to First Wessex Property Services in Portsmouth, where a new head and neck will be carved. The statue originally stood on the Black Swan Hotel at the junction of High Street and Southgate Street, where Holmes and Dr. Watson lunched in Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's The Adventure of the Copper Beeches. The hotel was demolished for road widening in the mid-1930s and replaced by the current office block. Hazel Warwick, Asset Management Director at First Wessex, said, "This is an unusual project for us, and we're thrilled to be part of the restoration of this important part of Winchester's heritage." Alison Davidson, Head of Historic Environment at Winchester City Council, said, The Swan originates from the Black Swan Hotel, which stood on the corner of Southgate Street since the early 19th century. Before that, the building was an inn, known as the Old Swan. The hotel was replaced in 1935 with Black Swan buildings, and the carved swan is the last remnant of the hotel. In 1945, the swan fell to pieces, and members of the public raised £55 needed for local craftsman Edwin Laverty to carve a new swan. Campaigner Chris Webb of Southgate Street said, "I'm absolutely delighted. All we want now is a plaque with a Sherlock Holmes connection." And there is a little photograph of our hapless swan still perched up there, and his wings waved, no doubt in anticipation of receiving his new neck and head in due course.
A Winchester Wildlife Park has been put on red alert over the safety of its rhinos. Marwell Wildlife has been warned that its rhinos may be in danger from poachers because of the value of their horns in the Asian medicine market. Horns are now worth more than £25,000 a kilogram after a rumour broke out that they could cure cancer. The National Wildlife Crime Unit has alerted all 15 zoos and wildlife parks in the country that hold rhinos to tighten security and report any suspicious behaviour. John Pullen, Marwell's curator of mammals, said the park had security measures in place to combat any threats. He said, "The security measures here include people living on site, and we have alarms set throughout the night that alert mobile phones instantly if they go off. And we also have webcams to protect the animals, and we have our perimeter fence. So we take security seriously, but we are constantly thinking about how we can improve security in the park, and protecting our rhinos comes into that." The Colden Common Wildlife Park has three white rhinos on site, a 28-year-old male called Hanu, and two 25-year-old females, Kiri and Sula. On average, an adult white rhino horn weighs about 5 kilograms, meaning that the Marwell horns are believed to be worth around £375,000 on the black market. It comes just months after Marwell launched its Help Us Save Rhinos campaign, raising funds to help protect wild rhinos from poachers in Zimbabwe. The news follows a spate of thefts of rhino heads from museums and auction rooms in Europe, including Essex, Suffolk and Sussex, where horns were removed. Powdered rhino horn is traditionally used in Asian medicine, where it is believed to lessen fevers. In the wild, rhino poaching has increased dramatically in Africa over the past 5 years, with 448 rhinos killed for their horns in South Africa in 2011, compared to, in 2007, just 13.
Oxbridge offers add more lustre to Peter Simon College's laurels. Students from a Winchester sixth form college have gained coveted places to study at Oxford and Cambridge universities. Peter Simmons College has 49 conditional offers for Oxbridge applicants this year, 25 from Cambridge, 24 from Oxford. It was a double celebration for Peter Simmons following the release of AS level and A level results, which it claims ranks it as the top sixth form college in the South. The Oxbridge figures are comparable with previous years, though down on last year's record-breaking 55, the same number as achieved back in 2009. To gain the places, college governors conduct practice interviews, and students are encouraged to do wider reading, attend open days, and participate in summer schools, as well as being offered mentorships in the form of ex-students currently studying there. Kalpana Shenoy, teacher in charge of the Oxbridge entries at the college, said, "As ever, these offers are the result of a splendid team effort from parents, teachers, careers advisors and administrators, as well as the students themselves. Every applicant usually ends up with either an Oxbridge offer or a place at another top university." Principal Neil Hopkins added, "This is a massive number of offers for any educational institution and ranks us alongside the best known public schools. Oxbridge colleges recognise Simmons as one of the regular major feeders and know our students will live up to the references we give them."
And another mystery story, slightly less exotic. It's over the delayed start for the new Aldi store. Time could be running out for Aldi to build a store in Winchester that triggered more than 500 objections. Planning permission for the cut-price supermarket in Burnett Close Week expires on Sunday, February the 26th. This week, it emerged that the retailer had asked Winchester City Council for more time. There's been no building work since Aldi won planning permission in early 2009. It came after a torturous four-year battle to redevelop the site of the former Chimneys pub. The scheme was blocked by a government planning inspector, while the council refused it four times. After a public inquiry, the retailer finally gained permission at the sixth attempt. Yet no building work has since started, leading to speculation last year that Aldi wanted to ride out the economic slump. This week, the Hampshire Chronicle asked the company to confirm if the store would ever be built. A spokesman for Aldi's agents, Weber Shandwick, said, "Aldi's property team isn't in a position to comment at this moment, and it's more likely to be in a matter of weeks rather than days that we might have something to say. At this time, there is no update." Yet the Chronicle has learned that the City Council received a request from Aldi on February the 1st to renew its permission. Under planning laws, the authority cannot reject it unless new issues have surfaced since the 2009 ruling. At the time, residents fighting the plans had concerns about traffic and parking problems. The impact on nearby shops was also raised, and the scheme drew more than 500 objections. The campaign against the store was coordinated by Brian Wareham, who lives in Burnett Close. He said a digger was seen clearing vegetation at the site a fortnight ago, but there had been no other activity. He added that a house in Burnett Close that Aldi bought as part of the scheme was currently available to let. Assuming the lease would be for at least 6 months, he said it looked unlikely that building work would start before then. "With all the money it cost, with two appeals and four planning applications and all those barristers, you would have thought that Aldi would be going ahead with it," said Mr. Wareham. The company managed to recover some of its legal costs after winning the public inquiry in 2009. The inspector ruled that the council should not have refused the plan and ordered the authority to pay £50,000. It came after the authority granted approval for a larger Waitrose supermarket next to Aldi's proposed site. The refusals led to accusations in some quarters that the council felt Winchester was too posh for a low-cost store. Neither Aldi nor its main competitor in the UK, Lidl currently has a branch in the city. All his application to renew the permission is expected to come before council planners within a few weeks.
Trees to be planted to celebrate the Jubilee. Hundreds of majestic oak trees are to be planted across Hampshire to mark the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. The County Council is planning to spend up to £250,000 on events to mark 60 years of the Queen's reign. Letters have been sent to more than 500 schools and parish councils across the county, inviting them to take part in the tree planting scheme. The idea is that the council will supply and deliver oak saplings, while schools and parishes will be responsible for planting and watering them. In addition, plans are in the pipeline to create two new areas of woodland with public access in the north of the county. Councillor Leader Ken Thornber said a working group chaired by Hampshire's Lord Lieutenant Dame Mary Fagan had been coordinating Jubilee celebrations, including the tree planting initiative. Councillor Thornber said, "We are working with the Woodland Trust in this programme of planting and have chosen oak trees as they have a strong connection with Hampshire, being a native species and widely planted across the county." The council boss said there had been a very positive uptake by schools and parishes. He added details of the new public woods would be announced when negotiations with private landowners were finished. Other Jubilee events include a search for people who have given 60 years of voluntary service to take part in a special service of thanksgiving at Winchester Cathedral on May the 27th. And people have been asked to nominate their diamond volunteers.
County completes digital revolution. The biggest change to television in a generation began on Wednesday, as analogue signals were turned off across much of Hampshire and digital TV boosted to reach all areas. The switchover means that thousands of viewers in digital black spots, including parts of Winchester, can now get BBC Free View for the first time, while picture quality will improve for many existing viewers. Homes already watching Freeview need to retune their television and boxes to regain the BBC services, which were missing yesterday morning. Switchover began early yesterday when analogue BBC Two was permanently turned off at the Hannington transmitter in North Hampshire. The process will be completed on February the 22nd, when the remaining analogue channels will be switched off. Further Freeview channels from ITV, Channel 4 and Channel 5 will then be available from local transmitters for the first time. The Switchover Help Scheme is still welcoming application from eligible older and disabled people to get help to convert one television, including a choice of equipment, installation and aftercare. For those already signed up, the help scheme can be contacted on 0800 40 85 900. Bill Taylor, Regional Manager for Digital UK, said this is great news for Hampshire, as many people are receiving new channels for the first time. Those viewers who haven't switched to digital should prepare for February the 22nd, when the last analogue channel will be permanently switched off. Our advice is, get ready now. Don't leave it until the last minute. Digital UK, the body leading the switchover, continues to provide support through local advice points, as well as its website and advice line.
The boss of Winchester's Theatre Royal is confident of its long-term future, despite the financial climate and uncertainty over grants. The theatre is set to receive less funding in this year's council budget, but Mark Curtis, its director, says the venue will survive through providing quality attractions. Mr. Curtis told a cafe culture meeting of Winchester's art committee community that the theatre had to focus on getting paying audiences in rather than over relying on council handouts. He said, "We do still continue to have local authority support from both Winchester and Hampshire councils. They both support us really, really to the hilt as much as they can. But it's not enough, although not their fault. That's just how life is. That's why I talk about keeping the theatre full, because that's the way we're going to survive." He added, "There are about 50 different audiences out there, and I want to tap into each one of them. What I think we need is more planning, more places to work in, more productions, and more fun at the theatre." His words come at a time of financial success for the theatre, despite the economic turndown and reduction in grants. The theatre broke its takings record for the pantomime Peter Pan in 2010 and posted near-record crowds for last Christmas's hit, Cinderella. It followed on from a successful spring programme in 2010, which saw the highest percentage of ticket sales recorded since the Theatre Royal reopened in 2001. The theatre underwent a £4.1 million revamp at the turn of the century, completely refurbishing the building with a bigger stage and foyer and better seats. Bosses at the theatre also recently announced they would reopen a cafe on site for the first time since 2001 and were interviewing candidates for the £16,000 a year manager's job. Mr. Curtis added the theatre was looking into a partnership with Winchester Discovery Centre to put on a series of family events, while there were also plans to involve older performers by visiting lunch clubs and working with charity Age UK. He also praised the forthcoming spring season at the Theatre Royal, which includes an all-black cast production of Waiting for Godot, stand-up comedy from Russell Kane, and opera with The Barber of Seville. It will also host a series of talks and workshops throughout spring relating to its productions, including pre-show discussions and after-show question sessions. Chris Turner, Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, said he thought the programme would be a success. "I think this whole programme is incredibly exciting and there will be more crossover of audiences as we get into it," he said.
Donuts, bring in the dough. Naomi House sealed a sweet deal with Reeve the Baker. The Bakers launched a Donut Week, with 10 pence from every donut sold being donated to the Sutton Scotney Hospice. Fiona Hansford, the corporate fundraiser for Naomi House, said, "We're delighted to be included in this fantastic event and very grateful to Reeve the Baker for their support. There can't be an easier way to help than by treating yourself to a delicious jam donut." Julie Huxtable, head of sales at Reeve the Baker, added, "And we couldn't think of a more worthwhile cause to support, and hope that our many loyal customers will help us to do so."
On that quite positive note, that ends our extracts from the week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and to all our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Michael Wyard.
Goodbye.
Graham Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And Bobby Sanderson.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too, and have a good week. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.